Hello, and thank you for joining us on Weekend Warriors Hockey, the official podcast of the Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy. I'm Austin Holthouse, and co-hosting with me are Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy founder, Rick Parisi, and Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy head coach, Rob Boyle. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may get your podcasts. You can also listen to us on our website, weekendwarriorshockey.buzzsprout.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Weekend Warriors Hockey. Today, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do a player profile. We have a adult hockey player, Damon Carr, who's also a Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy alum, and he's agreed to join us today, and we're going to talk about things adult hockey related. And Damon is an adult hockey player who lives in Laguna Niguel, California. He did grow up in California, spent some time in New York, and then moved back to Southern California, and now he's coaches and plays out in the Great Park Ice where the Anaheim Ducks actually do their practice. So he grew up in Northern California, played a little bit of hockey, and moved to New York, played some roller hockey out there, and then came back to California and started playing ice hockey again exclusively. And he's been a beer leaguer ever since. And he is also a coach. He's coached every age level, and including coaching blind and special needs kids. Damon also attended the 2017 Anaheim Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy camp, and that's where he got introduced to Rob and Rick. Today, we're going to talk to Damon about everything adult hockey related, about things that he's enjoyed in his life as a hockey player, what motivates him not only to play, but also to coach, and maybe some challenges, things he wants to do to continue progressing as a hockey player and as a coach. And at this time, we're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to the episode, Damon.
Hey, how you doing? Great to be here.
We're very happy to have you. Rick, how are you doing today?
Very good. Thanks, Austin.
And then Rob, who's fresh off a move from Kansas to Atlanta and is enjoying the southern weather. How are you doing today?
Very good. Thanks.
All right. Excellent. We've got everybody on the line and ready to go. Damon, you've coached every age level, and you even noted that you've coached blind and special needs kids, which I think is amazing. I can only imagine how both rewarding and interesting it's got to be to coach players of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I was very apprehensive going into the blind and sight impaired hockey. I'd never done anything like that before, and really couldn't imagine what that would be like. And there were some people with 100% blindness, and then there was other individuals who had varying degrees of sight impairment. And the way they do it is they've got this really large puck that makes a banging sound, like the ding, ding, ding. And so what you do is they can, of course, hear that, and you work with the players to position them, get the puck on their stick when needed. And we did passing drills. These guys were doing breakaways against goalies. I mean, it was just so fun and such a blast. When I came out of that, I just thought, man, how many people come up with excuses on why they can't do something? And here you've got these people blind out there playing hockey and just having a blast. It was really inspiring.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I know here we've got a lot of sled hockey is very popular, and to watch some of these folks that come in that don't have, that are paralyzed or don't have limbs and things like that, and for them to come out and to play is, again, just like you said, you can come up with a million excuses not to play, not to do something, but here are these folks. You've seen it with the blind and special needs kids, and it's just amazing that what people will do when motivated, what they can do and what they can achieve. Okay, so I wanted to kind of circle back to something you mentioned before, and that's that you had some friendships from your days in youth hockey that you still have to this day. Can you talk a little bit about what those are and what they mean to you?
Yeah, absolutely. My best friend, Mark Gujan, who I really have to give credit for introducing me to hockey and creating the passion, he and I would play street hockey in his cul-de-sac and just beat the hell out of each other. We're also like avid hockey card collectors. But there's no youth hockey at that time in Sacramento. And there was a gentleman by the name of Scott Liming, and he actually went to Hobart. He was a classmate and played with Pierre Maguire, actually. So he and Pierre Maguire are really good friends, fraternity buddies even. So when Scott Liming found himself coming out of upstate New York and moving to Sacramento, he followed his girlfriend, who was going to UC Davis. It was really fantastic because he ended up starting youth hockey in Sacramento. So my friend Mark said, hey, there's hockey. Let's get out there. Let's get on the ice. We had a local ice rink. It was called Birdcage Ice. It's no longer there. And Scott found himself coaching this just ragtag bunch of, you know, Bad News Bears type players. None of us could skate very well. None of us had much hockey experience other than street hockey. And he really formed us into a unit that went on to win a state tournament. It was just incredible.
That's an interesting way for things to come about, especially as you mentioned, with having not much of a program up where you grew up, and then to be able to turn some young kids into a championship winning team. So with that, you know, starting your hockey back in the 1980s, hockey's obviously changed quite a bit. What does it feel like to you? What motivates you and to step on the ice after all these years of playing? What keeps you going out there?
Well, I really, really don't like to be bad at things, especially if I enjoy them. And so I think, you know, I'm not the best hockey player in the world, but I am very focused on skill improvement. That's what brought me to Weekend Warriors, which was an incredible experience, probably the experience that made me realize that I wanted to get into coaching. And I shortly right afterwards got into coaching after my Weekend Warriors experience. So, you know, for me, it's all about skill improvement. And, you know, my skills have progressed, but you know how hockey is. There's always somebody to compare yourself against that you feel like you're terrible. So ever since I was a kid, you know, it was much more recreational back then. But as an adult, it's that competitive nature and that entering those flow states, those elusive flow states that we get on the ice sometimes, where, you know, you lose track of time and you stop thinking and things happen that you didn't consciously do. They just happen, whether it's scoring a goal, making that pass. So, you know, those are the moments that I enjoy the most, the flow state moments. And secondarily, I would say the skill improvement. If I can do a slap shot a little bit better because I worked on it for an hour, you know, that's the other aspect that's really, really rewarding.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. That's very close to kind of how I feel about playing hockey is it's that feeling of getting better as you continue to try and do something. And much like you, that trip to the Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy really helped me identify those things I need to work on and gave me the motivation to do that. So, okay. So now that you're in Southern California, and we know that a big reason why hockey is big down there is because of the Ducks, because of the Kings, the success they've had and kind of the expansion the NHL had. What would you say on a scale of 1 to 10, the community's like down there?
Oh, it's a 10. It's definitely a 10. Well, we've got guys now making the NHL coming out of our program. The Rinks has done a fantastic job. We now have the Anaheim Ducks High School Hockey League, which has, I want to say, 25, 30 teams at this point. So, you know, Southern California is just completely transformed. And you got to give a lot of credit to Rick Hutchinson, who was really the main driver and is the director of hockey for the Rinks organization, which Great Park Ice is a part of. Taking that to just the players, you know, whether it's, you know, the police and fire leagues, whether it's the rookie leagues and adult learn to play clinics, high level play at the silver and gold in the beer leagues. I mean, it's just phenomenal. The level of skill, the level of fun, and just how cool, you know, hockey people are a unique brand of human. Hockey people are the best people in the world.
Yep, absolutely. So, Rob, at this point, I was hoping maybe you could help dive into a little bit with Damon on coaching and maybe get some insight with kind of perspectives and anything you really want to go into with him on coaching.
Well, first and foremost, I think, you know, anybody that takes on the role of a coach in any sport, especially at the youth level, needs to be commended because it does take a lot of time and effort. You want to be constantly prepared when you're going on the ice. So you got to, you know, you got to do your practice plans. You got to communicate with other coaches. You got to communicate to the kids. You got to communicate to the parents. So it's certainly, I commend anybody that takes on that task. You know, I think one of the things out there with regards to coaching, though, when it comes to dealing with parents, is that I think one of the, let me rephrase that. I think one of the things if you want to be a successful youth hockey coach is make sure that your communication with the parents is clear and concise from day one. Have your team meeting at the beginning. Have expectations set forth. Make sure you have a coaching philosophy, what it is you're going to be doing for the entire year, and how you're going to, you know, run the kids, whether you're playing travel or house league, it doesn't matter. Because I think parents have this idea that they know sometimes will probably know better than you. I've had parents have stopwatches on their kids because they only got this much ice time and it was 10 seconds less than this kid. And I mean, it can get pretty daunting, but I think the one thing that parents need to realize and understand that, you know, you are, and this goes for referees too, you're a human being out there trying to do something and make the world a better place within the sport, and you make sure kids are having fun. And fun can take on different meanings depending on what level you're coaching, what age level you're coaching. Again, whether you're coaching a house league or a travel team, those things are different at every level. And so I think, like I said, I commend anybody that takes on the responsibility of being a coach in any sport at any youth level needs to be commended, because it is a tremendous amount of work. And it can be very rewarding, and it can also be very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Demoralizing.
Demoralizing. Yeah. You know, you think you're doing the right things and you're there for the right reasons, and parents are constantly beating you down. And I think sometimes we can lose coaches and referees, with regards to that. So I commend anybody that, that takes on the responsibility.
Yeah, and my philosophy is, you know, you got to get the parents on your side. I mean, yes, getting a hockey coach, though, they'll probably tell you the biggest challenge can be parents. I've been pretty lucky. I did have one incident that I can talk about that was completely my fault. But I believe that you need to over-communicate, as you sort of alluded to. My emails go out every week. There's, you know, big team introductions. There's a very structured approach to proactively nipping in the bud parent objections. In fact, if I know that I haven't played somebody a lot, let's say that there's been a bunch of penalties and so their line got skipped because the power play line was out, whatever, I know which players got shafted on ice time. I'll typically email the parents right after the game and say, hey, look, I know Olivia got kind of shafted on ice time. I'm totally aware of it. You know, we're going to get her some more ice time in the next game. But funny enough, the better the player is, the more the parents almost want me to be harder on them. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate parent that you want. You go a little bit down and you have some parents that, you know, this is a very wealthy, affluent area. So you've got a lot of people that are used to being very powerful in their normal lives. So they want to translate that into how they handle their interactions. Each person's a little bit different, each parent, but it's worth it. You know, whatever it takes to manage that relationship, to avoid the conflict, you're just going to be a much happier coach and have a more successful team.
I agree with you for the most part. I think the one thing I don't want to give parents too much of a say. And you can take this for advice or not, but you know, being aware of the you know, not giving a kid a certain amount of ice time. You know, I would deal with that right away. I wouldn't do it in email. I would deal with it right away, just so you have that face to face communication. And I think sometimes parents can become keyboard warriors, and you know, to do it face to face, you get their response right away. You know exactly how they feel about it, whether you're being honest or or maybe do it at the next practice. I always had the 24-hour rule that I didn't really want parents talking to me 24 hours after a game or whatnot. But I think you want to have that face-to-face contact with parents so you know exactly what their reaction is going to be. And because it could happen again, right? You want to know, where do I stand with this parent? And that's just something for me personally. I always wanted to know where I stood with everybody. So I always preferred the face-to-face contact and face-to-face communication. I understand that's not always possible. But you're absolutely right. The parents are your stakeholders, really. They're the ones flipping the bill. They're the ones driving to and from tournaments, to the rink, back and forth. And you definitely want to keep them informed of what's going on. But they have to keep in mind that you are the coach, and you're going to make decisions that are best for every kid on the team. And, you know, I'll say it, it's okay to discipline a kid too. That's another thing that I think parents can get a little uppity about, or however you want to say it. But, you know, I had a kid when I was coaching high school kids, and we went to a tournament, and we had a kid take three consecutive unsportsmanlike penalties talking to the referee. And I let it go the first time in the first game. I let it go the second time in the second game. And then I benched him for the third period of the last game. And I had the dad come talk to me, or he wanted to come talk to me, but he talked to my assistant coach. He was all mad because he got benched. Well, why do you think that is? And, you know, so it's one thing that you want to keep them updated and you want to keep them informed, but they need to understand that you are the coach and you're trying to do what's best for all the kids involved.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I appreciate that. And I agree, you know, there's so much communication that's nonverbal, that you get in person that you just don't get in an email. So, very, very good point.
So let me ask, as not being a coach of any sport, really, having been coached many, many times in my life in sports, but you know, for both Damon and Rob, what do you guys see the difference between coaching, say, a rec league player, if you will, you know, at a younger age group, or even as you get, you know, a little bit older, versus a kind of a select team? And I think that's maybe where you get a little bit more into the, you have to develop the players, but you also, if you're playing in a, I guess my perspective would be, if you're playing on a select team, there's going to be some players that just aren't as good as the other players that have to fill a role, and they're not going to get the same amount of time. And obviously I would imagine the communication with the parents then needs to be even greater to explain what the role your kid is going to be on that. You know, I experienced that playing soccer growing up on select teams, and then through high school, my roles changed depending on what my talent level was versus the other kids that were on the team. So what do you guys' perspective on that?
Yeah, I think they're definitely two different things. So this goes back to what I just said about, you know, what's fun for the kid. Now, at some point, competition becomes fun, right? You get those kids that are in house league that just want to be there, they just want to play, they want to get on the ice, and that's awesome. That's the other thing parents have to understand. It's okay just to be a house league player, because at the end of the day, and at the end of their careers, they're going to end up where we all end up, playing in beer league. So, but at some point, you know, some kids want that competition and they thrive on that competition. And so that's where, as a coach, that's where you can really push an athlete at the travel level or select level or whatever you want to call it. You can really push an athlete and try to get the best out of them. You can be a little stronger on them or tougher on them. You can raise expectations a little bit. But you still want to make sure, especially depending on the age group that you're coaching, that they're having fun and that they still love it. I don't believe in beating a kid down or this, that, and the other thing, but I've been tough on players and teams based on effort more so than actual playing. If they make a mistake, I always try to correct it. And again, that's at travel or at house league. It's just different. You're dealing with a different athlete, and you have to understand that as a coach, and then know where you can push your kids at the select level. And then the recreationally, just make sure those kids are learning and developing their skill and having a blast. It should be something where they wake up in the morning, and they want to go to the rink. That should be. So I'll give you a little story with just my own son. So I used to have an hour drive to my work when I was living in Virginia, running a rink there. And my son would have to, whether he had a game that afternoon or he was playing that morning, we'd have to get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning sometimes. And so he was young. He's about 7 or 8 years old. And I said, Zach, if you want to come with me to the rink, all right, you have to come wake me up and get me out of bed. And so his alarm would be set. Of course I was up, but, and if he slept through his alarm and he didn't want to get up and didn't want to go, he wasn't going to go, but he got up and got me out of bed. Dad, we got to go. We got to go. And so my own personal thing was that that's why how much I knew he loved to just be at the rink and loved to go and loved to have fun. And so, but you know, it is, you are dealing with a different athlete when you get into house and select and travel, whatever, again, whatever you want to call it. So you just have to understand what you're dealing with. And then you do have to kind of set different expectations for the parents, for the players. And, but at the end of the day, it's all got to be having fun.
Yeah, that's really well said. You know, I mean, if you think about in-house versus select and travel, ice time at the higher levels is a privilege. It's not a right. When you're dealing with in-house, you know, it is a right because they're paying, you know, to get better. It's purely for development reasons. In fact, we're explicitly told to coach, you know, not to win. That's not our first priority at the in-house level. It's to get people better and to also make sure they have fun. Now that's what the goal is, but you have to strike that balance for in-house because to try to keep the parents happy, you know, they want to win. So that's the art is how can you coach in such a way that pretty much everybody's equal for the most part, but you still want to win. And this is a quick story where I screwed up as a coach, and it was a really good learning experience. I found myself in a championship game a couple seasons ago, and this is 18U, and so I'm thinking, well, these are older kids, you know, but it is in-house. Nobody expected us to get this far, and I've got two really good goalies, but one goalie is just a little bit better than the other. And so I asked the team, I said, hey guys, this is the championship game. You know, nobody thought we were going to make it this far, but look, this is in-house. I can coach this like in-house where everybody's equal, or I can coach this to win. You know, you guys tell me, what do you guys want to do? Because if we coach to win, not all of you are going to get as much ice time. And unanimous, oh, coach to win, coach to win. And I said, all right, well, we're going to go with a starting goaltender. He's going to play the whole game unless he gets pulled. And it's, you know, John or whatever his name was. So I sat my backup goaltender, who, like I said, was just they're pretty much the same. He's just a little bit, not quite as developed. And we play that game, and normally we get blown out by this team 10-1, 10-0. We end up finishing the game, I think, 8-7, right? It was close the whole game. We had a shot. We lost. So I'm feeling pretty good about myself, you know, and way better than anybody expected. So as I'm trying to get off the bench, this mountain of a man is like shaking with rage, just gets right up in my face. And he's just like, how dare you? How dare you, you coward? And I'm thinking, okay, what's going on right now? And then I realize this is the dad of the goalie who I sat the whole game. And I said, look, you know, hey, nothing against your son. He's a great kid. He's a great goalie. But I asked the team, we decided to go to win. And he's also my kid. You can't win a game with my kid in net. And I just, I realized that I just made a terrible mistake. And of course the family complained to management. And that was a situation where we did a face-to-face with the mom and, you know, lesson learned. That was not appropriate for in-house, and I would not do that again. And my boss, Dave Walker, who runs hockey at Great Park Ice, gave me some great advice. He said, look, in that situation, you know, start your weaker guy for the first period. If you're getting racked up, then pull, you know, switch goalies. But yeah, you don't do that. So my fault, lesson learned as a coach. I'm sure there'll be a ton more mistakes I'll make and more lessons to learn. It's all good.
That's a great example. I think one thing, and I'll jump in here too, is that, you know, we tend to lose a lot of kids at that older age level, 16U, 17, 18U, because obviously other interests, beyond the ice arena. And I think that, you know, and I don't want this to sound like I'm coming down on your decision-making at all, but I, you know, it's one of those things you got to think about, like what would be the self-esteem of this kid, that you didn't play and, you know, how's it look in front of the other teammates? Like, let the kids decide. You know, I think I would agree with the person you had mentioned. I would maybe play that guy or whichever one you thought might be the weaker one, or just go in with the idea that, hey guys, you just tell the team, hey, we're splitting. I don't care. You know, I mean, that's where as a coach, you have to let them know that you're the boss and this is what we're doing. And I made the same mistake when I first moved to Wichita, and I wanted to take a team to the Silver Stick, and I let the parents decide if they wanted to go because I was new and I didn't want to, you know, invoke my authority too early. And it was voted down. So the next year we went and I said, we're going, I don't care what anybody else says, we're going. So we all have those decisions, and they're very tough to make. And, but just something to think about is, you know, we're splitting, you know, this is the way it is, guys, we're splitting.
Yeah. So I was able to personally apologize to that kid, the goalie that I sat. I was really glad that he stuck with it. And he's actually become even much better. I mean, I hope that lit a fire to make him work that much harder. But I gave him a heartfelt apology. I said, look, that was inappropriate. You didn't deserve that. That was my fault. You know, I'm really sorry. So I was happy to apologize for that. I mean, the other thing that's obvious, that probably doesn't even need to be said, is, you know, where I'm a software developer, I'm a technologist, so I love systems, and playing with in-house kids, you know, you really can't do much with systems. That's where I find it a lot more fun with higher skill players, higher level leagues is you know, you can run systems. But that kind of goes without saying, I think.
Yeah. Is there something, Damon, that you run into with your youth hockey players that you see parents commonly having a common misconception that you run into?
Well, yeah, on occasion, you know, there is the misconception that you know, we're not playing, they think that we're just playing to win, as you mentioned. And that is not the main objective. The main objective is development and fun. But, you know, I've had pretty good luck, to be honest. I mean, you know, if you're dealing with it at the in-house level, they pretty well know it. And I do try to work with each individual player on getting them developed. And often that requires, you know, off-ice time, one-on-one skill development, beyond team practices, whether I'm working with them or whether I recommend one of our coaches that we've got in the rinks. We've got a ton of really good coaches that they can work with. And then usually I'll pick the coach based on what skill they need to work on most. You know, what I really, this is a little bit of an aside, but what I really don't like is sometimes I'll get a really talented player who may not come from the wealthiest family. And so they probably can't afford to move to that next level in hockey. And it's really frustrating when, you know, they don't have that option. And it's just about money. It's not about the skill of the kid. I wish we'd find a way to cover the expenses of kids like that, whether it's via scholarship or some other mechanism. And I know they do that in some places, but I haven't seen a lot of that in Southern California.
Do you guys find that your travel is extensive? Obviously ice time and all that kind of stuff is expensive just to do it. But is travel a big thing that you have to do in the Southern California area? Because California is a giant state. I mean,
well, I'll jump in here. I know it is a giant state, but they also play out of state in a lot of them. Just to give you an example from a small town like Wichita, I mean, it was anywhere between $2,000 to $3,000 to play travel. And that's Wichita. So you get in some of these bigger cities.
That's just to pay for your ice time at your home rink and all that kind of stuff.
Pretty much. And you know, when you travel, you're obviously there's gas and hotel rooms and this, that, and the other thing, tournament fees. Tournament fees are usually wrapped up into the overall scheme of things. But, you know, the higher you go and the more competitive you play and the further you have to travel, you get into $10,000 a year, $12,000 a year. It's crazy.
It's a crazy expensive sport.
It is a crazy expensive sport. And I think, so, you know, that's part of the reason when you throw equipment on top of that, this, that, and the other thing, it gets really expensive. And it does become a bit of an elitist sport when you get a little bit older. So I completely agree that, you know, sometimes you do get these kids that don't have the money to get to that next level. And I know our association did have a scholarship program. So I can speak to what we did. I'll even say as a kid growing up, I was a decent player. I was all right. But I was, you know, I had some advantages too growing up in Toronto and having some scholarships afforded to me, or else I wouldn't have been able to play as high as I did or gone as far as I did if I didn't have that. So I would like to see associations get behind that and try to figure out a way to raise money for those kids that are less fortunate. As the NHL PA and the NHL slogan has become, you know, hockey is for everyone. And so we got to find a way to make that expense a little bit easier on parents and families, especially kids that have families that have multiple kids. It can be really, really expensive.
And if I could chime in a little bit, just, you know, as for the adults at Weekend Warriors, we've put together a scholarship program that we've had for years. And because we want to be able to offer a camp for someone who has that passion for the game and loves the game and wants to get better and just doesn't have the resources. So we put out 3 scholarships per year to come to camp. So that's out there. A lot of people don't know about it. So we have a whole page on our website dedicated to the scholarships.
Yeah, I can attest. It was, I referred somebody for that scholarship and you accepted them. And that was the 2017 Anaheim camp. So yeah, that's real. We really appreciated that.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's good to hear that.
I'll throw it over to Damon to talk and, you know, Rick, maybe if he wants to expound on what impact the Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy had on you as a player, and then maybe dovetail that into our previous discussion about, you know, did it help you with coaching as well?
Sure. You know, one of the big reasons, perhaps the main reason that I switched completely from roller to ice is there just weren't a lot of opportunities to develop my skills in roller. You know, in ice, there are a lot more clinics. You know, I was driving an hour each way at one point during in the middle of the week to go to a clinic that was great. But, you know, I really wanted the experience more like the kids get, where you're part of a team and you get practices. You know, even in beer league, we don't get that. It's just pretty much playing games. We don't have practices. So when I read about the Weekend Warriors experience, I was very intrigued and said, I got to do this. You know, and a couple of years went by and I said, no, I really got to do this. They're coming to Anaheim. You know, I have no excuse about that. I got to. So going through that, it was intense and it was not about scrimmaging. You know, that's a very small part. It was about skill development and I loved it. I mean, I was such a better hockey player after that experience, but my whole mindset shifted on that you could actually improve that much in that short of a time if you had the right coaches. And the coaches were amazing, I mean, every single one of them. And the things that were focused on were so relevant, whether it was skating, shooting, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on skating, which is, I think, something, you know, a lot of people could benefit from. So what happened after that was, wow, you know, if I really want to keep this up, how I can take it to the next level is to become a coach. Because if I'm coaching and I'm going through the USA Hockey CEP levels, I'm now CEP level 3, which isn't very high, I think 4 is this year. I'm gonna kind of, in a selfish way, allow myself to get better while I'm teaching kids how to play hockey. And so, yeah, that sort of made me realize I want to get into the business in some way for myself, for somewhat selfish reasons. And as a side benefit, I realized and learned that, oh my God, it's actually incredibly rewarding to work with kids as well.
Damon, that's great to hear. I love hearing stories like that. And definitely like to hear that, you know, it helped your game as well as your passion and motivated you to kind of continue improving yourself. Cause that's something we talk about at camp, right? Like, you know, you're going to get better at camp, but you know, a lot of it depends on the amount of work you're willing to put in afterwards, because, you know, we can teach you everything or most of the stuff that Sidney Crosby knows in a weekend, but we can't, you know, you're not going to be able to do all that stuff, right? It takes thousands of hours of practice, and not that we expect you to be anything like that, but just having the passion to improve your game and then pass that on to the kids is a very heartwarming story. So thank you for that.
After Weekend Warriors, you will know what you don't know.
Yep. Yep. Well, we're looking forward to coming back to Anaheim to bring that back and hopefully get more of that infectious Southern California hockey crowd.
Since you've attended the camps or the camp, I'm assuming Damon is only one camp. Is there something that obviously you're passing along a lot of this information that you've learned and developed your own style and picked up how to coach through the USA Hockey programs? But is there a process that you use that continues to help you improve? Do you have a process that you do, whether it's weekly or monthly or whatever it is, to keep both your skills up and improve them, with the exception of just going to play your beer league game?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as a coach, we do a lot of clinics in all different ages, and we have some pretty definitive drills that we do. We break into stations, and stations have particular focus areas. And by, you know, I'm participating. I mean, I'm out there as a coach, but I'm, as much as possible, I'm demonstrating, I'm doing the drills with the kids. I mean, not every coach does that, but I use those opportunities as a coach to just do the basics. And I mean, I think it's one of the things that it's maybe not so unique to hockey, but the basic drills, the basic skills are something even the pros practice over and over again. So, you know, we're doing inside edges, outside edges, transitions, you know, the pivots, like all of the sort of basic stuff. I get to practice myself because I'm a coach. And this is a little secret I'll tell any beer league player out there that wants to get better. A, go to a Weekend Warriors clinic if you haven't already. You probably have if you're listening to this. But B, you know, go be a coach. You know, you're going to get paid to get better at hockey. And you're going to have a great time while you're doing it.
I'll add to that too. I think when you talk about a process, I'm actually a CEP instructor. So the one thing I always try to encourage my coaches, after, you know, when they're at the clinic, is to seek out other ideas from other coaches, whether on YouTube or you can find something online. To always try to improve yourself from a coaching standpoint. I try to learn every day I go to the rink. I don't know it all. I coached 10 U kids this year, which is the first time in a long time. And I really had to scale back, you know, my way of thinking and understand I was dealing with 10-year-olds. And it really helped me, you know, become a better coach from a communication standpoint. I've worked with 10-year-olds before, but it had been so long and I'd forgotten. So it really allowed me to improve my skills, or just kind of rehash some old skills I hadn't used in a while, and really communicate with these kids and realize that's what I was doing. And then, you know, taper back the drills a little bit, you know, getting into ADM practices. And I do agree to, you know, getting involved with those drills is awesome. And, but the kids love it too, which is a lot of fun when they see the coaches out there doing it with them. And, but if you're going to be a coach and you want to get into that type of thing, I think you got to seek out as much information as you can. And can that's in line with a philosophy that you've developed for yourself, which is an ever-changing thing, and will change with the level of athlete that you're working with. Again, whether age-wise or skill-wise, But you got to try to improve on that every single day. And that's, and I even to this day, I try to do that as a coach. I can tell you that I'm doing a webinar tomorrow, on breakouts with, the NHL Coach Association. And Rick knows Jamie. I was talking to Jamie today, and, he's worked with us in the past. He's a coach in the National Hockey League, and he's doing a webinar tomorrow that he invited me to on breakouts, and really breaking it down. So I'm always trying to seek out, more information, different ways of thinking, different philosophy, just how we tell our players when they come to camp, when they come to Weekend Warriors, you may have done something a certain way at your rink, and we might be doing the same thing, maybe describing it a different way to open your mind up to learning differently. And as a coach, we have to do the same thing.
Yeah, I can imagine the, it just like every sport, I mean, it some of them seem to change yearly on ways that they do various different things, and the innovation and now metrics. I mean, my God, they're talking about Corsi and blah, 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 that kind of stuff at the NHL level. It won't be long before your U10s are going to be charting Corsi, whatever the hell that means. Good luck with that, Rob.
But, yeah, I analytics stuff. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, and maybe we're getting off topic here. I mean, I look at the stuff, and you can interpret that any way you want. You can interpret it for or against. I still think the eye test is the best thing to go by. But analytics, I think, was built for baseball, and I think it's great for baseball because I think there is a lot to it. But like I say in our camps, hockey is an ever changing thing. It's not the same from shift to shift. As you might see from inning to inning, it doesn't change. You come out, you pitch, you hit, you catch. Hockey, you change shift. You're doing something different. It's something different every single shift. So, yeah, I get analytics. I think it's a great you have to look at the information, but you need to interpret it the right way. I still think looking at games, looking at video and the eye tests are still certainly for me anyway. And you know, some will beg to differ, but is still maybe the best way to go. Again, I'm not discounting analytics at all. I think it's just, I just think it's a different way of looking at the game.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So
my soapbox for the day.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's what these are for. All right. So let me throw one final question out there for you, Damon, and then we'll let Rick and Rob kind of close up if they have any further questions or anything they want to chat about. Who would you say three people maybe that have helped you become a better hockey player or coach?
Oh, more. There's more than three. I mentioned Rick Hutchinson. You know, I owe him a lot. I owe my boss Dave Walker a lot. Jacob Romo is a buddy of mine. I played very high level. He's young. I think he's only 21, but he brings an intensity that I've really loved to watch, and he's taught me a lot on the tactical side on how to execute a lot of these drills and what the drills are. Vince Vales is another guy, just amazing asset to the rinks. People like Dave Bastone and my original coach, Scott Liming. I mean, he's the original OG who came out to Sacramento. I mean, I still to this day can hear him in my head when I'm playing or coaching, you know, the things that he did and the things that he recommended. I had no idea at the time. But I just spoke with him yesterday, and we had a long talk about things. And I let him know just how much of an impact he's had on my life. And I can only hope that if you would ask that question to the kids that I coach now, that a few of them would think of me. I mean, that's such an awesome possibility that I could have that much of an impact. And I think a lot of coaches do on people.
Yeah, I can tell, but based on your passion, that there's no doubt there are some kids out there who will look back and say, you know, Coach Carr had a big impact on some part of their life. It may not be the hockey aspect, you know, we all don't get that necessarily, but it could be something that's even more important, you know. So certainly, I can tell with the passion, somebody who's been passionate about hockey for. You know, since the 1980s, and there's probably some people. Hopefully, there's some people out there listening who don't even remember the 1980s because they weren't born yet. But that's a long time ago.
I got to throw in the Weekend Warriors coaches as well. You know, yeah. You guys, amazing. You guys definitely had an impact, and so thank you for that.
Thanks, Jamie. Good thing you said that because you were going to get it next pick.
Just saved himself.
the first interaction I had on the ice with Coach Rob here, he was coming off knee surgery.
Yeah, I was probably 6 weeks off, actually.
Yeah, so I mean that in itself impressed me that here's a guy who is coming out on a knee that he just had surgery on. He's probably trying to fix something so he can skate better. And he's out there doing inside edges, outside edges, you know, maybe not to his best ability, but you know, that's impressive to have that dedication. So I always appreciated that about you, Rob. There you got one thing. So yeah, no worries.
Austin's trying to make sure the next camp he comes to, he doesn't get beat on too much either.
Yeah.
Take it easy on me. That's the take it easy on me, Rob.
I got a bad knee. All right. Rick and Rob, are there any other questions either of you wanted to ask Damon and or anything you wanted to add? And then I'll push it over to Damon for any kind of final thoughts.
Go ahead, Rick.
I just wanted to maybe express some gratitude to Damon and the players and coaches like him. For those of you who have been coming to camp, you all know my story. For those of you who haven't, I used to be an engineer. I did that for 20 years. I started Weekend Warriors and the thing that's, it changed my life in a way, you know, you talk about like job satisfaction. I get so much satisfaction and, you know, it's because of passion for the game that people bring and the love that they have for it. And they come, I get to meet a lot of great people. And then I hear stories like Damon's, right? Where, you know, he got better at the game, you know, passed that knowledge on to kids, got into coaching. So that gives me a tremendous amount of satisfaction. So Damon, thank you to you and to all of you out there that, you know, have learned and enjoyed the game and got into coaching.
Well, thank you for doing Weekend Warriors, because certainly, very valuable offering that you're doing there.
Thanks, Damon.
I got nothing.
All right.
I just see Austin staring away, waiting. I don't know if he's waiting for me to say something or
just wait. Yeah, absolutely. Well, since the first time in 7 episode, Rob has nothing to add. We'll push it over to Damon to see if there's any final things you know you want to talk about.
I just said I didn't have anything.
He's saving it for next time.
No, I would just say to fellow beer leaguers who are listening to this, you know, you don't have to be the best player in the world to coach. In fact, sometimes the players who have to work a little bit harder make better coaches. I see a lot of guys who just have natural talent. They don't even think about it. And they just light it up. They don't, not always, but as a rule, they're not always the best coaches. It's people like me, who struggle, who have to work harder than other people, because we have to go through the motions and really think through the body movements and positioning and all the intricacies of how to be successful. So I would just add, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, God, I could never be a coach. I'm just a schmo, you know, beer league player, not very good. Like, no. You could absolutely be a coach.
Great. That's cool.
Well said. Very well said.
Thanks, Damon. That's great. Great insight.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode for the interview part. Rick, is there anything you wanted to throw out there for COVID-19 updates before we sign off?
Sure. With the COVID-19 situation, we canceled our Pittsburgh camp. We're looking to reschedule that for later in the year. We're waiting to hear from the rink. The Shelton camp is the weekend after that. In all likelihood, it's going to get canceled. We're just waiting for final decision from the rink and see about rescheduling. You know, beyond that, we don't know. What I do know is that when we do get back to it, it's going to be a great season, because we're going to have a lot of people that are going to be really happy to be out of their houses and be on the ice and seeing other people and playing this game. So we are going to get this season underway at some point. So we're just going to, you know, get through this part, and everybody stay safe, stay distant, and wash your hands.
Stay home.
That's right. Yet listen to some podcasts. Although listening to podcasts, there goes my dog. He doesn't want to listen to one, but, numbers are like dropping because nobody's traveling, nobody's commuting, so they're not listening to podcasts. So anyway, that's a whole different side.
Okay.
Yeah. If you are a if you are listening to this podcast, I highly encourage you to go out to YouTube. Damon mentioned it before, but find something you can do, whether it's a workout, just some stick handling or something like that, while we're all stuck inside. It will help keep you sane. So with that, Damon, thank you so much for joining us. If you ever want to come back, just shoot us an email. We'd love to have you back again. Anytime somebody has passion for hockey, at least from my perspective, I want to hear about it. So thanks for coming on the show. And gosh, my dog will not be quiet. Thanks for coming on the show, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you. And I'll definitely be back.
Thanks, Austin. Thank you, Damon. Really appreciate your time and sharing your story.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we'll talk to everyone again real soon. Thanks. We hope you enjoyed our episode and are motivated to learn more about how you can improve as an adult hockey player. If you have show ideas, disagree with anything we said, or just want to say hi, please contact us. Simply email us at info@weekendwarriorshockey.com or leave a message on Weekend Warriors Adult Hockey Academy Facebook page, Twitter, or Instagram sites if that's easier. We love to read responses and listener questions on the air. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may get your podcasts. Share us with a friend or two or three and leave a 5-star Apple Podcast review if you enjoyed the show and want to learn more. Until next time, keep working hard and improving each time you're out on the ice.